Hey friends, welcome to the LifeScan Learning Lab edition of the Get Balanced podcast with me, Dr. Donnie, and my friend and co-host, Chief Todd LeDuc, episode 117.
Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
All right, Todd, let's kick this podcast off.
That's great, Donnie. Great to be back with you. And this is the gift that keeps giving. We're over a year plus of episodes. We've had some tremendous friends, colleagues, leaders in all walks of public safety on, and today is no different. We've got a great friend and colleague who has had a tremendous career with public safety and serving in many different capacities, like many of our guests. So I want to welcome Vicki Lee on as our guest today. And Vicki, go back a long ways with you, back to my early days at IFC and safety, health, and survival. So thanks for joining us and agreeing to come on, and welcome.
Thanks, Todd. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. And, you know, Donnie reminds me every episode, either before we start or in the middle of the episode or somewhere about, you know, we have hundreds of listeners from all walks around, not only the country, but even international listeners of the podcast as well. So I want to thank all of our listeners for continuing to support us and you know, being part of that community of ongoing learning.
And one thing, Todd, I want to jump in. And for those listeners or loyal ones out there, if you would be willing, if you go out to wherever you listen, whether it's Apple Podcast or Google Podcast, and give us a big thumbs up, that would be awesome. Because what it does, it helps us in the search and all the rankings, so that other firefighters and from our law enforcement friends out there as well to locate the podcast.
Thanks, Donnie. That's a great, great point, and we appreciate our loyal supporters. So, thank you for doing that. And Vicki, I want to just jump right in, since we've got such a diverse audience of listeners who may not know you. Could you start by just kind of telling us your journey, how you get into the realm of public safety, and when that was, and where that's taken you?
Absolutely. Thanks, Todd. I would say my career in public safety probably started in high school when I was thinking about going to med school in college, and then quickly realized that that was a lot of school before I could actually do that kind of work. So I did pivot in college, my undergraduate, and became a firefighter and EMT in my college town, which is Williamsburg, Virginia. I went to the College of William & Mary there. So small city, worked with the department that responded to the city and the neighboring jurisdictions, and had a really great experience there working with the local firefighters, obviously the career guys that were working there. And really just cemented my love of public safety and the camaraderie of the firehouse and things like that. So while I was in college, I was still going back to my home in Northern Virginia in the summers. And I did go ahead and I was volunteering there in the summers with a large combination department in the DC metropolitan area. So they had several volunteer houses around in that county. And so I was a member of one of them for a long time as well. And again, just had a great experience, did a lot of standbys at planned events, you know, the county fairs, things like that. And then also just had a regular shift night. I would say, depending on my schedule and my availability, I was sometimes, you know, staying the night and riding shift nights, you know, 2 to 3 times a week. So it was really, really good experience. It was a busy firehouse. And so it gave me a lot of good experience there. Sort of along the lines of my journey parallel with public safety and my dedication to wellness and fitness as well, I'll just preface my career into the IFC with the fact that I was a personal trainer for several years as well. So I had started, I just got very involved in fitness in my high school days. I continued through college and then decided that I wanted to parlay that into some sort of a professional type career short term, but did that for a few years after college before joining the International Association of Fire Chiefs, where I met Todd. And I did quite a bit of work there. I spent 20 years at the International Association of Fire Chiefs working in a lot of different areas. I was in government relations. I worked as a special advisor to the executive director at the time. I did human resources. I managed the information technology department. And then I did a lot of project management and did a lot of work with just representing the IFC with the IFF on various national projects. So I was heavily engaged on the Wellness Fitness Initiative that was a joint program with the IFC and the IFF. I worked on the program that followed that, the Candidate Physical Ability Test, and spent a lot of time again, working with representatives of the IFF and the IFC on that project as well. And then started once the Health and Safety Committee became a section, which is a larger representative of the membership of the IFC, which is where I met Todd. I was assigned there as the staff liaison. So I worked very closely with the board of the Safety, Health and Survival section, with the membership, planning activities, doing a lot of awareness campaigns, things like that, the safety stand down that the section started. So really through the current running through my entire public safety career, in addition to technology, which we'll get to, has also been around the health and safety and fitness of firefighters. So that's been a great experience. And so I was recruited then, one of the former presidents of the IFC was working on the FirstNet project right after the legislation was passed in 2012. This is Chief Jeff Johnson, and he recruited me over from the IFC to work on the FirstNet project, which it's now called the FirstNet Authority. That is the government side of the FirstNet project. AT&T, as you know, is the contractor providing those services. So in my capacity of FirstNet, it was great. I was able to use all of my experience I gained at the IFC with customer service and member relations and things like that.
Vicki, let me ask you, and this may seem silly, but since we have, you know, an audience that's so broad and diverse, talk a little bit, if you will, about what actually FirstNet is and what it does and how that it serves public safety community for us.
Sure, will do. Thanks, Todd. FirstNet Authority and was established in 2012 as a result of legislation passing that came out of the 9/11 commission that happened when we were investigating the communications failures during that incident at the towers. And so what the vision was to have a nationwide public safety broadband network that would eliminate the problems from 9/11, where we had all these disparate systems that did not talk to each other, whether it was land mobile radio, whether it was cell phone, what have you. And so it was a long time coming, but the funding was appropriated. We were able to successfully leverage the spectrum from the FCC and with a combination of objectives and incentives in a very creative public-private partnership, created this, what we call FirstNet now with AT&T. There was a very robust RFP process. And ultimately AT&T won the award and has been working very closely with the FirstNet Authority, which continues to get public safety input and did all during the process, right? So we wanted to make sure this was public safety's network and that it met their needs. So even prior to making the award, we in my role when I was there at the FirstNet Authority, we would go out to public safety. We had a public safety advisory committee, which were representatives of all of the major fire, EMS, and law enforcement organizations that was advising the board. We also did a lot of state engagement. We had single points of contact in each state that would help us bring regional groups together of safety, law enforcement, fire, and EMS to really talk about FirstNet, what it is. And really, it was a listening session too, really to hear what public safety needed, what type of coverage they needed, what their price points were in being able to afford something like this. And we gathered all that in and rolled that into what became the request for proposal. And so that contract was awarded in 2017. I worked on part of the team that was getting all the states to opt into this with their deployment plans that AT&T was creating for them. And ultimately what happened was the the network's been, the great thing about this was the network was able to be turned on right when the contract was awarded, essentially, because AT&T came up with a really creative solution where we did not have to wait to build out the spectrum that was awarded to the FirstNet Authority. We were able to leverage all of their commercial bands that they were already using. So in a very creative way to deploy this, public safety now has priority and preemption on all of AT&T's commercial bands. And as you know, they've been building out quite a bit of the band 14 spectrum as well.
Very, very good. And that, you know, no matter, I know this was born out of 9/11, but, you know, our listeners know it must be an after action report that you read front and center is communication failure. So having that infrastructure is so critical, particularly as incidents magnify. So great that we're able to have that as a community, and great that it's in place, and hopefully we'll never need it for another 9/11, but it's good to know that we're prepared. Vicki, now you've still continued to evolve from that role, correct?
I did, yes.
Sometimes I have trouble keeping up with you.
So it was a jumpy journey, but so after, let's just say after all the state governors opted in and the territories opted in, it seemed like a good time to move on. And some of the former FirstNet Authority principals that I worked with, the former president and chief counsel, founded a company called the Public Safety Network, which is where I am today. And our primary goal is really helping technology companies bring their solutions to public safety in an effective manner. So I would say, Todd, kind of just in your assessment of how technology is moving through in the fire service and how it's changing for public safety, FirstNet enabled quite a bit that didn't exist before. Certainly there were mobile applications prior to FirstNet, but without that priority and preemption, there was not a real sense of dependability and reliability in maintaining that connection. So with FirstNet and other public safety networks that have since grown as a result of FirstNet, there are so many more mobile applications now. As you know, public safety is a very mobile workforce. And so it really makes sense for them to be able to do a lot of their work from the field, which FirstNet and these other public safety networks have enabled. And so what we do, again, we'll have clients that are talking, they want to bring something to public safety. Maybe they're a startup and they have an idea, but they don't really understand how to sell into public safety. They don't understand how public safety buys, how they need to test equipment and solutions before they, you know, depend on it and will purchase it. The importance of peer referrals in buying equipment and solutions and implementing those solutions, the necessity of having that, you know, for mutual aid and automatic aid, making sure that these solutions all work together seamlessly. And so we advise them on how to do this. Sometimes, as I mentioned, it's a startup. Sometimes it's an established company that's bringing a solution over from a different vertical. Maybe it's industrial, maybe it's defense, and we really kind of help them tailor the message and the solution to make sure that it is what public safety is going to need and that they'll be able to use it effectively.
Yeah, great stuff. And as we know, technology, it seems, you know, just continues to evolve exponentially faster and faster and drives most all aspects, not just of industry, but in many cases, our lives. And, you know, I joke with having trouble keeping up with Vicki and her career, but the reality is, you know, her time at IFC, it became very obvious she's a rock star. And, you know, you can see from her career journey is wrapped her career progress around implementing bold and broad change. So very, very commendable. And, you know, that kind of a good opportunity to segue, because you had the opportunity over the journey that you just shared to look at the evolution of technology as well, and certainly interacted with many key players and stakeholders, not only for their needs, but future needs even. So I wonder what your thoughts would be as we talk about public safety on where we are technology-wise today and looking forward. And, you know, I guess I always tend to gravitate to a decade by decade, but probably the advances are even quicker than decades, years or maybe even months. I don't know. Where do you see us heading technology-wise looking into the future?
So I think with the cloud, that has really also enabled quite a bit of technology evolution in those shorter timeframes that you mentioned, Todd. The mobile applications and the devices are able to be modified more quickly now too. Yes, certainly there's a hardware component, but a lot of the hardware is now controlled by firmware, software embedded in the hardware. And so change just happens so fast. I would say as far as trends, and we're seeing this across the board, really within public safety, certainly there's a big AI component that's coming into a lot of the technology. Certainly we're all always going to need humans that will, kind of filter some of that, but, anything from, wildland fire detection and predicting how wildfires are going to move through a forest, a lot of that is based on past wildfire patterns and what that predictive analysis would look like. And so this is happening across, for example, in law enforforcement, it would happen, where crimes are more likely to happen, what times of day they're more likely to happen in certain neighborhoods, what types of crimes are going to happen. So that is a big thing that's growing. And certainly there's a lot of, apprehension around that, just as far as, how much information is being processed and is there a margin of error there? So those algorithms are continually refined. So that's one big component.
Yeah, I think that, if you look at, you mentioned we'll always need humans. I wrote an article a couple of years ago for Fire Engineering about robotics in firefighting, and I held my breath when I wrote it because I figured I'd have someone very upset that we were getting away, jobs, firefighter jobs. But again, it's another tool in the toolbox, right? Yeah. And I think the same with AI is, it's nothing to be fearful of. It's another decision-making tool to help us as decision makers. I think my listeners know, in my new role at LifeScan Wellness Centers, and we see lots of first responders, thousands, I think this year, over 50,000. And we do medical surveillance for them, right? So we do their annual public safety physicals with that. We collect, lots of information about their health status. I wonder, what are your thoughts about how AI may drive decision-making of identifying health risk, even in first responders, looking into the future?
I think that's a high probability. I think especially now that first responders in a lot of departments are using biometric sensors already now, right, to predict, baseline their own thresholds of heat exhaustion and heat stress. And so I think you can roll that into other risk factors that particular individual, and it's very individualized, that individual firefighter has, whether, maybe that firefighter is a little bit overweight or has, some other, maybe a respiratory illness or, something like that. And just, a great example would be sort of what post-COVID, what effects are happening to firefighters as a result of COVID exposures and infections they may have had over these last couple of years and how that may impact their risk going forward in their career. So I think it's a very useful tool. Again, certainly a balance in terms of the invasiveness of AI, if you will, but I think, labor and management are working very closely together to help reassure firefighters that all of these efforts are really to make sure that they have a very healthy and safe retirement and get through a great career in the fire service.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the key, right? Is being smart on how when we deploy technologies is how we're leveraging them and minimizing any potential negative consequences. But I see the potential as a huge opportunity to help us identify, we're those of you out there, I hope you're all tracking, your exposures. We had Dr. Lori Moore Merrill on the podcast earlier when she was prior to her appointment as U.S. Fire Administrator, and her passion about, NIF wars and exposure tracking. And, there might be the day that we're able to predict based on exposures, enhanced and likely risk to individual firefighters based on not only the exposure, but other health factors. So I'm kind of very excited that hopefully the future is bright, that we'll have more tools in our toolbox to keep our firefighters and law enforcement officers safe out there.
Pat, I just want to commend your work with LifeScan too. I've had an opportunity. I know it's obviously very useful just in terms of early detection for firefighters based on sort of this passion we all have for health and wellness and the safety of firefighters. But even personally speaking, I've encountered LifeScan at some conferences in my travels, and I have two personal friends who have had nodules detected in their thyroids, you know, as a result of those scans, just again, just sort of demonstrating the technology at a conference. And they went in for follow-up, and fortunately both cases came back clean and nothing to worry about, but they would never have known, you know, they were just happening to participate in this activity at a conference and realized that there was certainly a health concern that they had no awareness of prior to that. So thank you for
Vicki, for saying that. For our listeners out there too, you know, it's what we do at conferences is really just a small slice. You know, the LifeScan physical is a 3-hour exam with an exercise physiologist, an ultrasound technician, a nurse practitioner, blood work. But at conferences, we'll be at the Metro Chiefs here in next month. You know, we typically will do an ultrasound screening just to give a small idea of what the exam includes. And yeah, Vicki, you're absolutely right. You'd be amazed. You know, the one that sticks out of my mind, and Donnie will have to make a note to have him on the podcast, is Chief Mark Silley. Chief Silley was the chief of Mobile, Alabama, and was at the Metro Chief Conference, and his wife dragged him kicking and screaming, I'm told. He did not want to partake in a ultrasound, and I think at the time we were doing an abdominal ultrasound. And sure as heck, we identified a mass on, I believe it was one of his kidneys, that was suspicious and irregular. And, he followed up and you know, fortunate for him, he was identified with an early stage kidney cancer, and, his treating physician, the oncologist, said, I don't know why you had the ultrasound done. You didn't have symptoms. But it saved his life, and he has subsequently gone on to be a huge advocate, not just for health and wellness, but for LifeScan physicals, and it's brought us into Mobile. So yeah, thanks for that shout out. I know it's very rewarding for my journey in my career to be able to see so many lives impacted by just, you know, proactive early detection. So means a lot to you. You saying that? Yeah, Donnie.
I think that's the key word right there, Todd, is the proactive. You know, just like what you said, what the physician said, is like, oh, I'm surprised you had this ultrasound. You didn't have any symptoms, which of course is reactive. And I think as we work collectively, as we all work to help change the culture, to start thinking about, you know, what can we do proactively? From all of our health and wellness, from early detection to proactive on, you know, as we all know, to eat healthy, you have to be proactive at it. You got a meal plan. It just doesn't come by accident, does it?
That's for sure. It's, you know, I guess anything, what's the saying, anything worth having, and certainly your health being, you know, one of those, is worth working for. So that's, yeah, couldn't be more true. So Vicki, I wanted to also ask you, I know you're out west now, if I'm not mistaken, you're a west coaster, but I also know you stay very active in talking with, you know, our listeners, and Donnie and I always talk about, you know, part of that healthy approach to being successful, both personally and in a public safety career, is physical fitness and maintaining that. And, you know, I guess we all do it different ways. You know, many departments now have peer fitness trainers. At LifeScan, you know, we use an exercise physiologist to help kind of guide the firefighter or the law enforcement officer on how they can maintain their physical readiness. But can you talk a little bit about your, I know your background is in fitness, and I know you, I see you from time to time on social media. Your pictures are always representative of you doing something that is the same mantra of, you know, keeping physically fit. Talk a little bit about your hobby and how you maintain your physical readiness.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. While I was a firefighter and EMT, I was also a personal trainer for a while I was out of college too. I fell in love and found fitness in high school and continued that really through my whole life in different ways. And not only did it really help contribute to my effectiveness as a firefighter when I was actively working and riding fire trucks, it also is just, I think for me personally, it gives me just a way to decompress and, you know, just kind of focus on sort of that self-care, right? That sort of work-life balance. So for me, that comes in the form of physical fitness quite a bit. Being outside also does that. And so I am able, where I live now, able to do that quite effectively to be physically fit outdoors and really appreciate, you know, the environment and what that gives to us as well. And I think all of that's really important. I made a conscious decision about 16 years ago to try to achieve that work-life balance well before retirement by moving out of the very congested DC area to where I live now, which is in Bend, Oregon. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, I'll go retire someplace when I'm 60 or 65. And my conscious choice then was, I don't want to wait that long. I want to do this now in my 30s and be able to really have this great opportunity in a growing community that is very outdoor activity focused. We have rivers and lakes. There's a lot of paddleboarding and kayaking and trail running and camping and all these things that you can do where I live that just, you can do it back east in a very urban area. It just took a long time to get there. And it was, you know, a lot of traffic you had to fight to get out there. So my work-life balance started a long time ago. I'm proud to say that I've continued to achieve that really well where I am now and still really focus on that physical fitness. For me, it's just, you know, a part of staying healthy, you know, gives you sort of that mental break from work. And I find that because of that, I've always been very, you know, productive and able to feel energized coming back and working and being creative and being able to, you know, give my career everything I have just because I take those breaks every now and then. So I do think that's really important and something for firefighters to consider, you know, especially in their off time, you know, try to focus on, yes, you may have a second job, but, you know, make sure you're doing some fun things with your family and for yourself when you're not on shift.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, we talked with Chief Autodrodes just recently, was talking about priorities and you know we hear tactical athletes, you know, we're being referred to now as we're, you know, have to be at the same level as a tactical or professional athlete. And well, certainly, you know, most firehouses have some equipment to help, you know, maintain physical readiness. It really has to be a life commitment, as you point out. So how you achieve that, everyone's different. You know, whether it's, you know, as you say, just getting in the outdoors, whether it's, you know, whatever routine you have is just committing to that and staying with it. And our profession is, our listeners know, is unfortunately inherently unforgiving of lack of fitness, you know, can have devastating consequences. And quite frankly, if you look at, you know, most of the literature, it's also, you know, being a little bit overweight is also linked to most of the occupational diseases that we face, you know, whether that's behavioral health, cancer or cardiac risk are all elevated.
So it's actually, yeah, it's the number one. Being overweight and obese is the number one cause of all of our preventable diseases, including certain types of cancers. And even more so, of course, in the fire service. But I'm talking about, you know, general population. We're at 78% now, overweight and obese. And
yeah, it is.
Childhood obesity. I think that part of that, like Vicky, what you're talking about, you know, of course, I love work-life balance is those with, the, you know, if you go outdoors and your families, the life lessons you can help teach your children about fitness and all, you know, all of that, because we're seeing that so much now with children, of course, with the video games.
Yeah.
it's sad, you know, right. So it's great to hear that you're doing some things outdoors and, that's fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for our listeners, I mean, Dr. Sarah Jenke's done a tremendous amount of work saying, and hopefully I don't offend anyone here. I probably will, but won't be the first time, you know, that first responders are actually more obese than general population. And, you know, sometimes people hear that and they get offended. But the reality is, you know, stress levels, sleep disruptions, the environment we operate in kind of sets us up for failure if we don't take a very proactive approach to combating that and maintaining physical fitness. So great stuff. And for our listeners out there, again, it's important just to, you know, tailor what works for you, but make it consistent and be successful with it. So, Vicky, I wanted to ask you, touch on just a little bit. I know you're out west and you're active with, you interact with the Western division of the IFC. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the work that's going on with either the state level or Western division in terms of fire service issues that are at the forefront and on the radar screen?
Yeah, we work quite a bit with the Western Fire Chiefs Association, and we have a couple of different things that we're working on with them. We right now have an end user testing program that we're working on, again, with the Western Fire Chiefs. And what we're finding too with a lot of our clients and just even companies that are approaching the Western Fire Chiefs Association directly is they want to know if their technology, you know, how is my technology? What is my solution like? Is it good? Do you guys want to buy it? You know, can this help you? And so what we decided, we were getting so many requests like this. We have now formalized a program where technology vendors can bring their solutions to us, and we can identify agencies that are interested in testing new technology, doing demos, providing objective feedback to the vendor. You know, depending on where they are in their product cycle or solution cycle, they might be able to iterate it to make it better for firefighters. But that's been in very high demand. Again, making sure that what we are bringing to public safety is something that they need and that they've had input in the development process. So that's one project. The Western is also, I know, very engaged in a lot of wildland fire mitigation efforts. As you all know, we really don't have a fire season anymore. It is a year-round activity that we have to manage and mitigate and educate about. So I know they are very, very heavily involved in a lot of different types of wildland fire activities. They actually have a free virtual wildfire summit coming up, pretty jam-packed, coming up May 3rd and 4th. We actually just put some social out about that, but if you're interested in joining, it's open to anyone. So certainly an opportunity for that if you're either directly or indirectly impacted by fire. You know, they also have a lot of technology efforts going on. They just are very, very much into how, not just in wildfire, but obviously just in the fire service in general, and how that can kind of help with, you know, EMS operations, fire operations. So they are also kind of doing a little bit of vetting solutions like my company does too. But we do work quite a bit together on different solutions, just either from a testing and evaluation capacity or actually an implementation component as well.
Some great information there. And I know wildland and wild urban interface, and just it really has become, if you talk to any of our colleagues on the West Coast, you're absolutely right. It's a full court press, unfortunately, and really takes a toll if we don't have all hands on deck in terms of preparation, response. And I know I just had the opportunity to spend some time with mutual dear friend, our U.S. Fire Administrator, Dr. Lori Moore Merrill, out at the Texas Fire Chiefs Conference. And she was, you know, talking about, you know, the heightened priority of resources and making sure that we are aligning the resources to provide our communities and our boots on the ground, our first responders, the tools that they need to make sure we're effectively combating what now has really, as you said, become a year-round community threat. So, and I always worry, of course, about the health and wellness components of wildland firefighting, which I think are very unique as well compared to structural. So,
One other thing on that too, Todd, you know, coming full circle back to the FirstNet communications issues that we know pretty much are mentioned in every after action report. There are some really neat new technologies that are on the market now that extend the range at the edge of a network. So if you think about how firefighters use their tablets and their smartphones out in the field, and you can imagine the complications that a wildland scenario offers, we do have, there's technology already, you know, in the market today, which is just amazing because where wherever you are at the edge of your cell network, you can get miles and miles out from that through portable deployables. You know, there's deployables now where you can just put it on the back of a hitch on a pickup truck. And then even beyond that, there's mesh technology that takes you even further into the range where you normally would not have that cellular connection. And so that's important, not just for the operational side of things in making sure that happens, but also again, for the health and safety of firefighters, right? So when they are off network and unable to communicate, that is a massive problem, whether it's just a safety issue or even a wellness issue if a firefighter's having his or her own medical emergency and cannot let somebody else know. So this amazing sort of growth of the communications at the edge, if you will, is pretty amazing.
That's fantastic to hear. And just the magnitude and the scope of some of these incidents. I mean, they transcend multiple states, multiple communities, and being able to having that necessity and that resource, it's a lifeline, right? To be able to communicate, as you said, not just for operational deployment decisions, tactical and strategical decisions, but of course, most importantly, as you pointed out, you know, the safety of our personnel and accountability of our personnel. So great to hear. I'm glad for someone that has trouble turning my iPhone on and off, I'm glad we have people like yourself and others that are much smarter and astute to technology than I that are making sure that we have the right tools available to keep everyone safe. So Vicki, we've had a great conversation today. I know, just scratching the surface. So we'll have you back on, I'm sure, invite you to come back on. And Donnie will probably want to talk to you about his show and that he does on work-life balance. But I want to kind of wrap up with asking you if you had to look back and you kind of outlined your journey, and it doesn't seem like it's necessarily been a straight longitudinal line. It's, you know, it's like most of us, right? It's had twists and turns. And if you had to look back upon your career, personally or professionally, or both, and give advice to those starting out today and maybe thinking about either being in public safety or being familiar with or looking to maybe just support public safety, whatever that role that someone's considering, if there's a nexus to public safety, what would be a life lesson or a leadership lesson or just a lesson in general that you've taken away from your career that you would share with our listeners?
That's a great question, Todd. I think it would be the never stop exploring and keeping an open mind. I think a lot of folks going into the fire service today maybe still thinking that they're going to go into this fire department and maybe, or maybe they don't think that they'll stay at that department until they retire. Maybe they will, maybe they won't, but they may also think that if I'm going to choose a career path, I need to stay in that career path. And I think my career is sort of illustrative of the fact that there are lots of other doors that open that you may not be expecting, and not to be afraid of looking through those doors and seeing what's on the other side, because it is, you know, you could be perfectly happy, you know, where you are. I always was in every position I've held through my career. I've always like been very fulfilled and doing what I love. And then an opportunity comes before me and you evaluate it, right? You don't want to just say no right off the bat because you're locked into a certain way of how your life has to go. Just keep an open mind and just look at each opportunity for what it is and evaluate it. And maybe you stay where you are, but there are so many different things. And you don't need to feel that you're on a path. You definitely can parlay your experience as a firefighter and EMT into a lot of different activities. So whether you stay in the fire service your whole career or you parlay it into other elements of public safety, either way, it's a win for you and for public safety.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. I know sometimes we, being a planner by nature, you know, we always want to have, you know, whether it's a strategic plan or a professional development plan or some plan, but we know that life doesn't always operate around our plans. So having that open-mindedness, as you said, to evaluate and sometimes seize on, or in other cases, pass on opportunities as they present themselves. But and that's, I think, great advice, both professionally and personally. So some great wisdom there for our readers and listeners, and Donnie always chucks these up with links and resources, but sometimes it's just, you know, our guests have spent a long time getting to the journey that they've embraced, and most all of them been very, very successful. So take some of that advice and apply it in your own professional and personal life, and I know it'll do well. So Vicky, I want to thank
I'm sharing that one straight to my son. Vicky, my son's a new firefighter, but never stop exploring and keep an open mind. Don't be afraid to look in the doors that are open for you. Evaluate your opportunities. Those are my notes. So absolutely. And actually, speaking of that, he is going down for, I think, a physical evaluation and maybe of his first interview in Tampa, Todd.
Oh, very good.
Tampa Farm. Yeah. I'm trying to get him to follow me to Florida.
That would be it. It's beautiful here, as you know. Well, Donnie's gonna be a resident of the Sunshine State here shortly.
Yeah.
So that's great news to hear about.
Oh, Todd, you went silent on us.
That's great about your son. He's worked so hard, and you know, just really shout out to his military service, and he's continuing, you know, in your footsteps, and now a career public safety, serving community. So great work, and hopefully I get to see him down here in Florida sooner rather than later. We'd love to have him.
Yeah, me too.
Vicky, I want to thank you for your time today, sharing your journey and some insights and wisdom, and you know, chock full of information. So like I said, we scratched the surface, and if you're willing, hopefully we can find a time to have you back on and continue the dialogue.
I would love to. Thanks, Todd. Thanks, Donnie. Appreciate your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you. Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.